Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton of the More Perfect Union podcast. Real debate without the hate. With more and more Senate Democrats lining up to call for the resignation of Senator Al Franken, and with a major press conference scheduled for Thursday morning, it appears that Franken's storied rise to stardom in the political world is coming to an end. But there's another interesting story about the beginning of the downfall of Al Franken. My good friend, Doug McIntyre, is the host of the morning drive time show McIntyre in the Morning on Los Angeles's KABC Radio. Doug and I have been friends for about 28 years. We're both comedy writers. We shared an office together. We've worked in other countries together. And we often get together at Arts Deli in Studio City, Los Angeles, to talk about life and politics. Well, a few days ago, Doug sat down with me behind the mic to tell me how he became an integral part in the breaking of the story of Al Franken's problems with women. It's a fascinating tale of how little things grow to be big things, and how one small media outlet in Los Angeles can break one of the most important media stories in the country. Now, Doug and I also talked about some other issues in the news, but the first part of the interview is especially poignant now that we are looking at what seems to be the end of Al Franken's career in politics. With that in mind, here is my interview with Doug McIntyre. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm great. Thank you for getting up early to do this with me. So for those of you out there listening across the nation who may not recognize Doug's name, Doug, aside from being a terrific drive time radio host, was in the news recently for another news story that's kind of hot right now, and that's the Al Franken Leanne Tweeden story. Doug actually was part of the reason that this actual story came to light. So Doug, why don't you just tell us briefly how this story came to pass and your involvement in it?
Sure. Well, first of all, Leanne Tweeden is my news anchor. We worked together for the last year, 5 hours a day. And I know her very well. I know her husband. I've had dinner with her and her kids, her 4-year-old and 2-year-old. I've been to her house. So in addition to a colleague, I consider her a friend. And I hired her. So I obviously believe in her integrity. Otherwise, I wouldn't have hired her and we wouldn't give her the microphone to be the news anchor. With that said, here's the shortest version I know how to tell a backstory. It starts about 35 years ago. My partner at the time, Paul McDermott and I, were working with the great comedy team of Bob and Ray. And it was their 40th anniversary in show business. We knew that Lorne Michaels at Saturday Night Live was a big fan. So we pitched Bob and Ray's What's So Special special. It was their going to be a celebration of their 40th anniversary in show business. We sent a letter to Broadway Video, which is where Lorne Michaels had his office. And stunningly, we got a meeting. It took about 3 weeks, but we ride the elevator up in the Brill Building. We're ushered into Lorne Michaels' inner sanctum. He's eating a cheeseburger at his desk. And I remember he had a little bit of mustard, proving he was a Canadian. Mustard on the corner of his lip. And then he says, fellas, hang on a second. I want Franken and Davis to come in the room and be part of the meeting. So Al Franken and his partner at the time, Tom Davis, come in and he introduces us. Lorne introduces us and they nod and we nod in return. And he says, OK, guys, what do you got? And I say, Bob and Ray's What's So Special special. And Lorne wipes his mouth and says, if I want to do a Bob and Ray special, I hire Bob and Ray. I got writers. What do we need you for? And I was in the elevator in 40 seconds. Once the doors closed, in total silence, we rode to the lobby. And when we got up, we said, what was that about? Why did he take that meeting? Okay, so I have been describing that in various forms for all these intervening years. Cut to earlier this year, Gary Shandling passes away. I had worked briefly with Gary Shandling and got invited to his memorial service. And as it so happens, Al Franken was sitting in the same row I was sitting at the memorial. And the next day on the radio show, I told the funny Al Franken story. And I noticed out of the corner of my eye, and Leanne had just joined the show at that time. She'd probably only been with us for a month or so. I noticed out of the corner of my eye that she physically grimaced at the mention of the name Al Franken. So we went to commercial break. And I said, what's that about? And she said, and this is virtually a quote. I mean, it's paraphrasing, but certainly the gist. She said, let's put it this way. I'm not a fan of Al Franken's. And that's all that was said. We went on with the rest of the show, and we went on for months and months and months. His name never came up again. No conversation in any way, shape, or form until the Harvey Weinstein story broke. And when the Harvey Weinstein story broke, we were involved in it pretty deep from the beginning because Lauren Savant of Fox 11 here in L.A., who was a News 12 Long Island reporter when she had the infamous potted plant incident with Harvey Weinstein, is a friend of ours, both Leanne's and mine. And she's been on the show many times. In fact, she's filled in as the news anchor when Leon's not available. So we were very intimately involved in that story. And a couple of, I'd say about 10 days after that, Leanne put up a hashtag MeToo on her social media like so many women have. But there was still no conversation about Al Franken until we had a conversation with Congresswoman Jackie Speier, Democrat from the Bay Area. And she told the story of when she was a congressional aide, having her head grabbed by a member of Congress and forcibly having his tongue stuffed into her mouth. And at that point, it was a phone conversation. Speier was on the phone. Leanne mouthed to me, that's what he did to me. And when we went to a break, I said, who is he? And she said, Al Franken on a USO tour in 2006. And after the show, she showed me the photograph. And I said, what do you want to do with this? And she said, well, there were a lot of people who knew about this in real time back in 2006, 2007, when he ran for the Senate the first time. Leanne was appearing as an occasional guest on Hannity's show and the All-American panel, mostly to talk about, showbiz stuff. She was obviously a sexy, attractive girl who was in television broadcasting at that time, working on the best damn sports show. She wasn't there to be a political commentator. And she had chosen at that time, I'm not telling this story publicly, because she worried about career repercussions and she didn't want to get involved in a political controversy. But she chose to come forward at this time because she closely identified with the story that Jackie Speier had told, because that, of course, was her principal objection, the infamous photograph we could get to in a second. But her real objection to Franken's behavior was the forced kiss backstage, which was nearly identical to what Jackie Speier had told her, happened to her. So I told Leanne, look, this is a blockbuster story. And it's my observation prior to this, but certainly reinforced by all we've seen, that if you make an allegation against a political figure, there is blowback that doesn't exist with accusations from anybody else or towards anybody else. The politicians, like in Roy Moore's case and Trump, will either deliberately, consciously attack the accusers, or their surrogates will, or their acolytes will. And of course, that has exactly been what happened. But I had counseled Leanne to talk to her husband and decide whether or not she wants to subject her family to this inevitable blowback. And she made the decision that she was going to go forward. So at that point, my executive producer, Nathan Baker, is also the news director for KBC Radio. The program director, Drew Hayes, Leanne and I, met for about 2 weeks to decide how are we going to do this story. And one of the things we didn't want to do was have it break on Fox, because it would immediately get chewed up as part of the partisan brickbats that are everywhere. And none of us considered it to be a political story, because I had no idea who Leanne was initially talking about with hashtag Me Too. And certainly if it had been a Republican senator, had it been Donald Trump, we certainly would have not hesitated to do the story with the same level of veracity. So we made the decision to go forward with it. And we have a news partnership with CNN, and Jake Tapper specifically appears with us every Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on his schedule, for about 20 minutes. We do a once a week hit with Jake. So I personally called Jake Tapper Wednesday, the day before the story broke, to give him a heads up that we were going to be sending a written statement and the photograph to him at 7 a.m. Pacific on Thursday morning, the day the story broke. We also shared it with the Southern California News Group, the publisher and editor-in-chief Frank Pine, because I work as a columnist for the Los Angeles Daily News. And obviously I was going to give my newspaper the first crack at the story. Shared it with Lauren Savant at Fox 11, who notified Steve Edwards, for the reason being, obviously, her not only expose of Harvey Weinstein, but also because she had been very helpful to Leanne in coaching her, advising her on what was going to come in the aftermath. Because even with Harvey Weinstein, there's trolls that just creep on her because she's an attractive blonde news reporter. And that's just what people do. So anyway, the fourth person we notified was Westwood One, which is the parent company of KBC Radio's news, network news division. And we notified Matt Drudge, because that, in our world, is the best way to get any story out, because it's the principal clip service on the internet. So we also, by the way, contacted Senator Franken's office and sent him Leanne's written statement and the photograph prior to going live with the story. We went on the air at 7:05. By 7:10, the world was knocking on the door with camera crews spilling into the hallway. It was insane. It got so crazy that the program director made the decision to get the camera crews out of the building and move them across the street to another building and set up a post-show press conference that CNN ran live for an hour. And then the rest, you know. She did an interview with Jake Tapper in the afternoon. They flew her to New York to be on Good Morning in America and The View, during which time Senator Franken sent a handwritten apology to Leanne that was delivered at the studio via fax, and she accepted it on the air as she had accepted his initial apology. And essentially, that's the train of events that led to the story and how the story got disseminated across the country. Now, I want to address, if I can, for a second,
go ahead,
the Roger Simon connection here, because once again, Roger Stone, not the drama critic. Although maybe he had something to do with it, too. Roger Stone, who has the reverse Midas touch, he manages to turn into shit anything he touches rather than gold.
Right.
Has amazing connections everywhere. I mean, that's what he does. This is my personal theory. I believe that Hannity had known about the story going back to Franken's first Senate run when Leanne refused to do the story during that Senate campaign. And he never did the story without Leanne. But when we notified what we call Little Fox, Fox 11 here in Los Angeles, they had to order a camera crew and reporter to come to KBC to cover the announcement. And I believe it's just a theory, that once you start ordering 6:30 call times for producers, cameramen, audio, and reporters, and sending a satellite truck, now people start to know what the story is. And I personally believe, but I can't prove it, and there's no scandal in it, that somebody at Little Fox probably gave a heads up to the network in New York that there was going to be a big story that they were going to be breaking. Now, Stone is deeply embedded with people within Fox, the opinion side of Fox News, not necessarily the news side. I don't think Chris Wallace and Shepard Smith are on the blower with Roger Stone, but some of the others probably are. And anyway, that's where that came from. And he was able to find out about it a couple of hours before we went on the air and tweeted it out, or had somebody tweet it out, because he's been banned for life from Twitter. But it's certainly nobody from our camp told Roger Stone, and we were endeavoring, as I mentioned, to keep it from breaking on Fox for specifically the reasons. First and foremost, as we have a news partnership with CNN, and as a general rule, you don't stab your news partners in the back by giving it to their rival. But anyway, that is the timeline, and I think the only explanation that I can offer you as to how Roger Stone got involved in this at any level.
Okay.
So that's a pretty detailed and insightful look into how everything came to pass. Like you said, you know Leanne well. You are totally confident that her version is accurate. Let me ask you just, do you think that she can be correct, but it could still be a misunderstanding of sorts? I don't want to say innocent, but could it be that her perception of, first of all, did she ever tell you what the comedy bit was that they were doing on stage, why he was kissing her?
It's a sketch that this is what I've been told.
Yeah.
The sketch was something that was presented to her as something that he wrote for them to, for, first of all, she was the MC. She and Al were co-MCing the show. She's not a dancer. She's not an actor. She's a broadcaster. And she was playing the traditional role of the pretty girl at a USO tour, Bob Hope bringing out Joey Heatherton,
right.
Or Anne Margaret saying, fellas, I want to see what you're fighting for. Going back to Francis Langford in World War II, for Christ's sake.
Right.
So that was her role. It was 28 degrees at one of the shows. So she's wearing a parka. It's not like she was out there in a Raquel Welch fur bikini. Al presented her with material, a sketch that he wrote. She said, I'm not really an actress. He says, it'll be fun. I wrote it for you. Her name's in the script. What we found out subsequently, apparently he had done this on previous USO tours with different pretty girls. One was an actress from JAG, the CBS series JAG. That video was widely circulated as Leanne, and it's not Leanne. It's another person altogether from a tour that she wasn't on in 2003. But while backstage, he started to pressure her to rehearse specifically the part where they do this kiss. And I haven't seen the script, so I can't tell you specifically what led to the kiss. But she didn't want to do it. She said, there's no reason. I'm not an actress. We're just going to go out and wing it anyway. And she finally relented after he pressured her. And that's when he grabbed her head and stuck his tongue in her mouth, which she was gravely offended by because it was a physical forced contact. She shoved him away and told him, in effect, you do that again and I will kick your ass. So from that point on, and then they were cued within minutes to have to go out and do the sketch. She made sure that every time he came in to do the kiss, she either turned her head away or put her hand over his mouth on stage. And there's a contemporary Soldier blog post, by the way, from 2006, who was in the audience, who said Al Franken came in for a kiss and failed. That corroborates that she never let him kiss her on stage. For the remainder of the 10-day tour, he basically snarked at her. He denigrated her with some really genuinely juvenile stuff, like drawing the devil horns on the 8x10s when they're sitting at the table signing pictures for the soldiers. And it was
couldn't that have been because they just didn't get along? Couldn't it have been because he thought he had a good bit for them to do on stage, and he felt that she was just difficult and not working with him?
That's entirely possible, but Kevin, you have worked on plenty of shows where you had recalcitrant or difficult performers. Did you stick your tongue in their mouths? Did you grab their heads and stick your tongue in their mouth?
Well, I was going to make a joke, but I won't make that joke. But because this is everybody is going to hear a news story, and this is a news story, and we're all going to bring our own personal biases, our own personal experience to it. And that's why people disagree on things. Now, I have no idea what happened, and I have no reason to disbelieve Leanne's account. My only question, and again, I have nothing against anyone in the story, and I'm not an Al Franken apologist. I would be saying the same thing if this was Paul Ryan, okay? My question is, I'd like to know what the bit was, because if the bit was... Hey,
go look up the 2003 video of the girl from JAG. The sketch.
I will. Okay.
And basically, he just changed her name to Leanne Twins.
But was the joke that he was a nerd trying to move on a pretty girl, and was it supposed to be an awkward kiss?
I don't know. But to me, it's irrelevant, because once he grabs somebody's head and stick your tongue in their mouth backstage with no audience, you are
But I agree. Listen, I agree with you.
It's not. It's not. It's not Louis C.K., but it's a physical intrusion that was offensive enough that it radicalized Jackie Speier when she was a congressional aide.
Right.
The exact same sequence of events. So,
right.
And let's get to the photograph, because the photograph has been misrepresented. Leanne has never claimed that he was feeling her up. She was wearing a flak jacket. She could not. She was asleep and wearing a flak jacket. She's always believed that the photograph was his final FU, a humiliation that was directed singularly towards her. There was no audience for it as a joke. Everybody was asleep on the plane. You can see the leg and shoulder of the country singer who was sleeping in the chair next to her on the flight. The photograph was taken by an Army photographer at Franken's request. And it was, he knew that the only place it was going to get seen was on the disc handed to her by the photographer when she got off the plane. So there was no audience for look at this wacky gag. It was his way of giving her the finger after a 10-day acrimonious trip. Now, the reason that this is significant is that the principal offense was him grabbing her head and sticking his tongue in her mouth, which she rightly objected to, and then had to, while she was in an active war zone, had to endure her low-level, passive-aggressive, or sometimes over-childish snarking from the headliner. While none of the other performers are having to do this, by the way. She's the only one that has to do this. And then the final FU is coming back from a 36-hour flight home and popping in the souvenir disc from the Army photographer and seeing that photograph. She is authentic and justified in her anger. I remind everybody, she has not called for Al Franken to resign. She has accepted his apology, and she told the story not when it would hurt him most politically. She could have done it in 2007 when he was running for the Senate. She could have waited until 2020 if he's running for president. She told it in real time when the story of sexual harassment and assault is a national discussion in the context of the conversations we have been having on the show.
Okay. So let me just wrap up our conversation, because I want to talk to you about some other issues that you're just as passionate about. But let me just ask you, how is Leanne doing these days?
Well, I'm enormously proud of her. She is being subjected to horrific abuse by online trolls, including harassment at her home. And I want to make this point because I'm very passionate about this. And I know I made it earlier. The show business people and the media people have very few defenders. And when people come forward and defend them, the defenders are usually jumped on. The political people, whether it's Roy Moore or Donald Trump or Al Franken, have defenders. And because for some inexplicable reason, people can't absorb the fact that a person that they support ideologically may have misbehaved, even though we've all had to come to terms with people, artists that we've admired enormously. I was an enormous fan of Bill Cosby, especially when he was younger. Those comedy records, my brother and I wore them out. I know every laugh on those records from having played them over and over again as a kid. Louis C.K. to me is one of the great comic voices of our time, and maybe of all time. There's a lot of people who have had wonderful, amazing careers who have transgressed in their personal lives and disappointed people. And so that's no different from politicians. And yet, if you go back to the Hill Thomas hearings, and I always date the modern conversation on sexual harassment to the Hill Thomas hearings, Anita Hill never alleged that Clarence Thomas laid a finger on her.
Right.
She never even alleged that he tried to get her to sleep with him. She talked about how, who put this pubic hair on my Coke can, Long Dong Silver. And that was enough to have people to this day insist Clarence Thomas shouldn't be on the Supreme Court. So there are degrees and gradations of abuse.
Exactly.
And no one is arguing that what Al Franken did is rape or anything approaching what Weinstein people did.
That is, I think, the problem with the national discussion, because a lot of people are equating them. I see it on Facebook every day, as you know.
Kevin,
my medium of choice is...
See all kinds of unadulterated weapons-grade bullshit on Facebook all day
but
long.
But it's what the real people are talking about. Listen, the people in my group...
also sending around video of some other actress with Al Franken
yes.
and saying it's Leanne Tweed.
Right, right. No, there were mistakes made. I just want to... Listen, you've articulated this really well, and I get your side of it, and I'm not disagreeing with you. Just let me jump in with a couple of points.
Okay. People... Your show, jump in. Tell the guests to shut up. That's what I do.
By the way, this is just like our lunches that we have, ladies and gentlemen. I say hi, what are you having? And then Doug talks for the next 40 minutes. And I love it. Just to respond, 2 points. One is I do think that people are equating it and in a mistaken way. And that's an issue for me because – as bad as what he did is, it's still not the same as Roy Moore or a lot of other people. Conyers. I mean, you have to look at the difference in sexual misconduct.
I don't disagree with you, Kevin, but as the father of a daughter, what would your response be if your daughter went to a job and the guy she's working with grabbed her by the head and stuck his tongue in her mouth against her will?
I've been asked this question before. And I will honestly say, and you're not going to believe me, but I will honestly say, if my daughter was part of a performance of a show, and she was asked to rehearse a kiss in a sketch, that goes along with the territory. And you and I are going to have a private conversation sometime about what rehearsals are and how, you know, I mean, I go back to the Bill Murray, Gilda Radner nerds sketches. When there was a sketch that they did late in that run where he actually puts his moves on the Lisa character. And it's a big, sloppy kiss with tongue sticking out. It was meant to look awkward. It was meant to be dorky. Now, I don't know that the sketch between, and I hate using the word sketch. It was a little bit that they were doing on stage in a live performance. But I don't know that the bit that they were rehearsing, whether it was supposed to be that or he was supposed to be smooth. And for all I know, he may have misled her and he did try to put a move on her. I don't know. But I'm not ready to publicly condemn someone over the facts that we have so far because I think there's a chance that this might have been an honest misunderstanding. But the other thing that I wanted to throw in
It's hard. Let's assume for a second that misunderstanding took place.
Yeah.
Then how do you explain what happened for the rest of the tour culminating in the photograph?
Well,
you see, the incidents are all connected. And, you know, people are parsing this. They were parsing the photograph pixel by pixel as if it was a Zapruder film. You know, I mean, the photo is the photo. This is what amazes me. People believe every Roy Moore accuser, as do I, by the way, from 40 years ago. Leanne has contemporaneous storytelling and a photograph, and she's the villain.
Well, that's the stuff that needs to come out, the contemporaries, the people that she spoke to. The photograph is the photograph. But one other thing that I just want to respond to, a point that you made along the way is you said, well, people have a lot of problems believing that someone that they supported could behave this way.
Right.
That is not necessarily true. When the Anthony Weiner scandal first came out when he was a congressman, I and other Democrats did not support him, did not try to whitewash it. John Conyers, I am not whitewashing this, and I don't think too many Democrats are. And there are many other instances. And I will, and you know, listen, we all...
Please don't make me go back to Bill Clinton. But as long as we're there...
Oh, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Let's talk about James Carville saying, drag a $20 bill to a trailer park and see what you get about Paula Jones. That Lisa Myers, one of the really premier reporters for NBC News, gave Juanita Broderick a lie detector test and believed her, and Tom Brokaw threatened to resign from NBC News if they aired the story. I mean, the bottom line is, we're operating in a different culture on the trail of events of the Catholic abuse, sex abuse scandal, Jerry Sandusky, Bill Cosby, Bill O'Reilly, and the creeps at Fox News. We're at a period in history where this story has finally reached the boiling point, and now we're treating it differently than we were 20 years ago when Clinton was defended to the hilt by everybody up to and including Hillary Clinton.
Right. Absolutely. And we can re-legislate, re-litigate the Bill Clinton situation.
I just want to say that it's my point that you don't see Kevin Spacey defenders. You don't see.
And you don't see Anthony Weiner defenders, and you don't see John Conyers defenders.
No, but you see Roy Moore defenders, and
yes,
you see Al Franken defenders, and you saw Donald Trump defenders.
And what we're going to have in 2019 is a U.S. Congress with no Al Franken, with no John Conyers, and with a newly elected Senator Roy Moore. That's what we're going to get. So that's the country we live in.
Well, that's possible, and the Roy Moore conversation is a whole psychodrama that we'll have to do on another occasion.
Well, speaking of, let's move on.
I don't know if there's enough band space to get into how sick that is.
I know. But I want to cover with you other issues that you are well known for in Los Angeles that are just becoming national issues now. One is the sanctuary city issue. Which, you know, people outside of California think that all Los Angelinos are in love with the sanctuary city thing, you know, that we're the wacky left coast, blah, blah, blah. And people don't know that there are many people such as yourself who you have, you know, one of the major radio shows in Los Angeles, and you have been railing against sanctuary cities from the very day that you took the microphone there.
Yeah, with no impact whatsoever.
And you've also talked about the Kate Steinle death, murder, which has been in the news recently because the man that pulled the trigger of the gun that killed her was acquitted. And, you know, I don't want to go into the whole background of the story. Listeners, if you don't know about it, Google Kate Steinle, find out what's going on. Donald Trump used her as a political tool during his campaign, but it is a very tragic story. Doug, you know the Steinle family.
No, in this case, I didn't. I haven't had contact. We didn't talk to the Steinle family. The victims of a crime by illegal immigrants that I know intimately well is Jamil Shaw.
Jamil Shaw. Okay.
Go back to March of 2008.
Right.
And Danielle Bologna, whose husband and two sons were murdered by an illegal immigrant in San Francisco. And Don Rosenberg, whose son Drew was run over and killed by an illegal immigrant in San Francisco named Roberto Gallo. And many others, by the way. But so I've been covering the story for a very long time, and way before Trump. And there is no question that San Francisco's sanctuary policies contributed materially to Kate Steinle's death. If they had turned over, and his name is Garcia Zarate, even though he had many, many aliases prior to that, he had been arrested multiple times. He'd been deported five times previously, which, again, shows the fiction of border security when a multiple deportee could just keep coming back again and again and again. And there are documented cases of people coming in 20 times after being deported, getting caught the 21st time. But anyway, San Francisco literally, physically advertised that they're a sanctuary city with ads in Spanish on bus benches and on the sides of city buses. They didn't cooperate with ICE. The sheriff up there would not turn Zarate over to ICE when they asked to hold him for the sixth deportation. As a result, he was on the street, found the gun. The gun goes off either because he pulled the trigger or because he dropped it or whoever he claims, because the story changed three times, and Kate Steinle ended up dead. Had he not been in the country, had he been turned over to ICE, she'd be alive today. That's just an unalterable fact. Now, with that said, I try to avoid having opinions on trials that I haven't followed the way I try not to prejudge books or movies that I haven't read or seen. With that said, I was obviously inclined to believe that he was guilty. I was predisposed to believe in his guilt, and I suppose he's lucky I wasn't on the jury. But having followed the verdict and realized that the prosecution's case was based on a theory that Zarate was playing some kind of crazy game of Russian roulette where he picked up the gun and just started randomly firing at people, although he only fired one shot. The bullet hit 12 feet in front of him and ricocheted 78 feet and killed Kate.
It hit the ground, right?
It hit the ground 12 feet in front of him and then went 78 feet and hit Kate. Based on that alone, I think that the prosecution overplayed their hand. I think they went for a murder one conviction. What surprises me is that the judge gave the jury permission to bring in a second-degree murder charge or a manslaughter charge, and they didn't. They only brought in a minor gun charge, and that, to me, I find astonishing because it's certainly, in my opinion, manslaughter.
I think so, too. I mean, I didn't follow the case, so I'm just bloviating, but, yeah, it sounds like it to me, too.
If you're bloviating, what am I doing?
Well, but you get paid for it.
Hey, wait a second. I saw you cashed a check.
I did. The More Perfect Union actually got our first check for some ads that we did in September. We've been on the air for 2 years. We've made $250.
Add 34 zeros and you'll get a tax cut from Trump.
Exactly. And that's the next story that I'd like to talk to you about. So as we discuss this, it's a couple of days after the Senate passed their version of the tax bill. It now goes to conference, as you know. They're going to have to come out with a bill that then both chambers can vote on and pass, and then it goes to the president to be signed, assuming that that happens. Where do you see this going? Do you think that they're going to come out of conference with a bill that both chambers will pass?
Yes, I do. I do think that they'll get a bill passed because I don't think that this bill, there's a surprising similarity between this and the Affordable Care Act that at some point, the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, stopped being about health insurance and became about saving the presidency because the president had gone all in and he had to win this. And they were going to win it at all costs. And I think the same thing is true, not just for Trump, but for the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate. They've done nothing. They've accomplished nothing legislatively. Now, certainly Trump's done an awful lot from executive orders and through the mechanics of the executive branch, but legislatively it's been a disaster. So they need in 2018 to tell the American public, we promised you tax reform and we've delivered tax reform. Cynically, the bill is written much like the health care bill was. The biggest cost escalations of Obamacare kick in this year after Barack Obama's out of office. The tax cuts start to go away in 2019 after Congress is safely reelected. So they constructed a bill that's punitive to the states that didn't vote for Republicans and won't vote for them: New York, California, Illinois, Connecticut, New Jersey, the high tax states, with a lot of deep blue states, New Jersey. And they kicked the can past the midterm elections on the part that people are going to wake up and say, hey, wait a second. So it's not really, it's no longer really a tax bill. It's about surviving politically. With that said, there's aspects of it that I support. Barack Obama himself acknowledged that the corporate tax rate in America is too high.
Right. So did many Democrats. That's
right.
True.
So why, you know, lowering the corporate tax rate, I don't, in theory, have a problem with it. It's just how do you pay for it? And the estate tax repeal to me is a cash grab by the rich.
Right.
The elimination of deductions for state taxes, for home mortgages, for college tuition loans, for school supplies. All of these things make no sense to me. They're just making California, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut pay for the tax.
Exactly.
So this is an issue where I don't think you and I have any disagreement on the tax bill. As a homeowner in California, I think it's a disaster.
Yeah, it's going to lower the value of homes. People don't understand that the homes that they own, that they still have mortgages on, they're not going to be able to sell them for as much as they would have otherwise.
That's exactly right, because the incentive to buy a home in California is reduced. The other thing is the promise that the corporate tax cuts will result in greater hiring. It's
ludicrous.
It's not preposterous. It can happen, but there's a huge difference from now from 35 years ago when the Reagan tax cut came in. And that is the capital investment that companies are likely to make in new equipment is artificial intelligence. That's going to eliminate the workers they still have.
Oh, that's a great insight.
that's where nobody's buying a big, you know, analog, you know, pounding, you know, machinery so we can play, you know, Bugs Bunny music underneath it while something is stamped out on the third shift.
It's not going to be the Lucy Cake assembly line.
Fairbelt.
Yeah, right, right.
It's going to be machinery that replaces the current workforce. Now, that might happen anyway, but if you
this will only quicken it.
Billions of dollars to corporate. Because the problem is that most corporations, these big companies, I'm not talking about mid-sized or small companies, most big companies are multinationals. They don't have any allegiance to America.
Right.
We're just one market amongst many. And if their interest is in China as a growing market compared to Ohio, where do you think they're going to, you know, put their pressure?
Right, right. And, you know, I've said on the podcast, and I'm seeing this now in the news. I'm sure you saw this story. Really interesting. Before the Senate passed the tax cut, Marco Rubio and one or two other senators were floating an idea of, look.
Marco Rubio, did you notice I've been drinking water? I've been sipping water.
He does look hydrated and fresh.
Thank you. One of the nicest things you've ever said about me.
Yeah.
Doug looks moist.
No, what I was going to say is they were trying to pass an amendment that would lower the tax rate, but not to 20%, but rather to about 22 or 23%, which would have lessened the need for some of these other draconian cuts that they had to smash into the bill to keep it under the $1.5 trillion cost level that they needed to pass it in. What's the word I'm looking for? Not reconciliation.
That's what it will be. That's
yeah.
What's
but anyways, it's interesting that as soon as the Senate passed the bill, Trump started tweeting that he was not opposed to a 22% rate. What do you think that's about? Why do you think they did that after the bill was passed?
I really can't tell you. Anything that's written behind closed doors and passed at 2 o'clock in the morning is likely to be a deeply flawed piece of legislation. And I can only hope that the most noxious elements of this are fixed before it ends up on Trump's desk, because this thing will do a lot of harm to a lot of people. It can help people, but it's going to do a lot of harm to a lot of people. And, you know, the great frustration, and I really do feel like a man without a party, because
yeah.
I can't support your team because, you know, it's your people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's,
And
the Republican Party is a disaster. It's a collection of fools and grifters and ideological demagogues that are unrecognizable from any worldview that I hold. But with that said, this tax bill we desperately need to get our financial house in order, and this thing, from what we've seen, is going to blow the deficit up. I have no idea what happens to Republican rhetoric about tax and spend liberals. What we have is borrow and spend conservatives, which is even worse. At some point, we're going to have to address these issues. And, it drives me crazy that they spent all those years saying that we got to get rid of Obamacare. And then when they had the opportunity, they were writing it at the last second, like we used to write reports for school. what were they doing all those years? And it's the same thing with the tax bill. This has been their, wet dream for how many years? And they're writing it at 2 o'clock in the morning, the night before it passes.
Yeah. And what happened to Mr. Senator John McCain in regular order? What happened to that speech that everybody thought was, Lincoln's second coming? Because regular order did not happen on this bill.
Well, it didn't happen on the Obamacare bill either.
He voted against it because of that. He voted for this.
Look, this is what makes me crazy, is that, when Yuri Gurriel did the slanty-eyed insult during the World Series about Hugh Darvish, he got booed all across America and got a standing ovation when he came to the plate in Houston. And this happens with tribalism, that as long as you're going to circle the wagons around your own team and completely flip your position when it was the other side doing the exact same thing, then you have no moral authority, and the country knows it, and that's why everybody hates these people.
One last thing. I'm going to use that segue. Talking about circling the wagons, now that Michael Flynn has copped a plea, where do you see the whole Russia investigation going?
Well, it's going closer to the Trump family, you know, Christmas special. Because there's only so many people who are in the intimate circle. So it's going to go to Jared, it's going to go to Donald Jr., and it's going to go to Donald Sr., it may go to Jeff Sessions. And I don't see too many names beyond that. A couple of months ago, I thought, well, this doesn't look like it's going anywhere. But with Flynn flipping to keep his creepy kid out of jail, I think that there's a real possibility that if the Democrats can take the House in 2018, I think you could see impeachment in 2019.
I agree. And on that bright note, I want to thank you for taking the time to
like
talk to me.
We could end it like a war criminal, Slobodan, over in – we could end this by just chug-a-lugging some poison.
I'm sure a few people will.
It's poison as we speak.
Yes. It's always great to chat with you. I love our conversations, and thank you for doing our little podcast. It means a lot to us.
Happy to do it, Kevin, and I'll see you at Arts Deli.
You got it. Okay, take care, Doug.
Take care.